Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
I think three threes in a row, and all of a sudden it was out of hand. So I was felt fortunate to win it. I thought we played good enough at times, and yet I like what he's done with his team. He's got some good young players, and that's going to be a very, very good team in the hopefully this future, but in the near future.
That's Tom Izzo. Usually you talk well about somebody that you like beating and you beat often. Hey, keep him around. Well, Sparty didn't let Nebraska hang around very long last night. Welcome to Friday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Hope you're safe and warm and cautious wherever you're hearing us across the state of Nebraska. Interstate 80 is not cooperating because of weather. If you're headed westbound or eastbound in different parts of the state, so be safe and cautious and get to where you're going carefully, please. Mm-hmm. You heard from Tom Izzo, and you want to talk about knockout shot, the final 3 minutes and change. That did in Nebraska, an 18-point deficit heading to halftime. Caught highlights, rewatched some of it last night. I was getting ready for district basketball, and one ear with TJ Henning, who is watching it on BTN to go back here in studio.
It was on ESPNU. Just
that's what
deal.
I meant. Thank you for the. You're watching it on your computer.
Yep, the phone. Yep.
See there. Boom. Mm-hmm. So Nebraska doesn't get it done last night, 88-72. We'll start there. We'll get into some spring football. I want to talk a little bit more about the offensive line, and we'll get into the quarterback discussion in this hour. Bill Dolman, Pride of Fairbury. Billy D was not able to be with us last week because, well, it was my birthday, and he boycotts that. When I get older, he feels much older. Mm. Kidding. Bill has been doing NBC Sports Olympic coverage, Olympic sports coverage. So Bill has got a break between contests. So we'll get a hold of Bill Dolman in 15 minutes in hour two. We'll run down Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Talk some spring ball with him. And also Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report. Lars will give us a thought or several on Ole Miss and the trouble they may soon be in. Friday forecast with Klausburn around 5:40. Numbers to get in, 466-3776, 466-3776, toll-free 1-800-825-5865, and get a hold of us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, or at TJ underscore Henning. So how did you view last night? We've had this discussion about the head coach at Nebraska. You've seen good and you've seen tough times this year from the basketball team. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as things are out there, you talk about job security, you talk about things moving forward, you have this type of performance to follow up. Kind of a distracting week. With Nebraska basketball, not the fact that they've won two in a row, not the fact that they're trying to position themselves for some sort of postseason, but you talk about job security in that direction, and you can think it, but I don't think it was a serious conversation, and you know by now where I feel on that. But then you go out and you just get destroyed by a team right now that's not quite on the bubble. I think Michigan State's in, but instead of Sparty being a 6 or a 4 or a 2, they're probably like a 10 seed right now. And you saw a tremendous amount of urgency and execution last night. Miles Bridges is incredible. Enjoy him this year. Enjoy him the next 6 weeks, because if they're around 6 weeks, because he will be gone to the NBA. He is that good. He's that talented. He's that versatile. And you saw a team this year twice now in Michigan State that is just a brutal matchup for Nebraska. I think they're intimidating. I think they're too good down low, and they've had uncanny ability to hit threes. And it's not just that they've hit a bunch of threes against Nebraska in the two meetings, only hit four last night, but they hit some pretty key threes in the stretch and delivered that proverbial knockout shot. 0-for-7 was Michigan State in the second half from three-point land, but they hit four, including two in about a span of 12 seconds to push a lead that was hovering around 10 or 11 to make it an 18-point deficit on the road. And Michigan State was just extremely locked in. Not that Nebraska didn't go in locked in or ready to play, but you saw when Sparty concentrates, and they've concentrated twice against Nebraska, how good they can be. And you know what? I don't know what to tell you about the Big Ten, because Wisconsin's a team that looked like they got back on track. Nebraska had them on the ropes. What happens? Ohio State, a team that Nebraska just went and won at over the weekend, they win by 10. They were up as much as 20 points against Wisconsin last night. So you know what? You're just rolling the dice night in, night out, home or away. Not just with what Nebraska you're going to get, but with what Big Ten team you're going to get. Maryland is fading. Northwestern seems like they're doing okay. Purdue will be tested this weekend against a Michigan team that's trying to put a run together. And then you have Michigan State. TJ, listen, this loss last night should not be something you just dwell on if you're a Nebraska basketball fan. Yeah, you're disappointed, but I think sometimes you got to just step back and go, when this team is ready, this team being Michigan State, they are head and shoulders better than Nebraska, and they've worked Nebraska twice. And if you're Tim Miles in Nebraska, all you can do is move on to a team that, by the way, is kind of heating up in Illinois Sunday. You just chalk this one up to the better team won last night, and they did what they did the first time, and that's owned you in the paint. That's a question that will be addressed today when Coach Miles talks to his guys and they get ready for this weekend, because Michigan State was just too good down low. And again, they hit from outside when they needed to. Timeliness.
Yeah, Nebraska only seems to beat Michigan State when they're ranked. And Michigan State has not been ranked the last two games. So we need Michigan State to do better, I think, is what we need to have happen. I was surprised how badly Nebraska was beaten on the boards last night. Going into the season,
overall, it was just five and just three on the offensive glass. But in the first half, they got destroyed.
Yeah, and 12 offensive rebounds. It felt like more like 20. I thought maybe going into the season that could be a bit of an issue, but boy, Glenn and Ed and Jacobson have really rebounded well, and even Jordy, so that hasn't been an issue, but last night it was. And that freshman last night, Nick Ward, I've been very impressed with him this season. I think he's a stud as well for Michigan State. Him and Bridges both go for 20, so they were a handle to handle. Nebraska just, you know, the effort didn't seem like they're initially in the first part, came there in the second half, but Nebraska just struggled a little bit. I've got a question for you, Schmidt, because going into the season, my main area of concern for this team was where was the shooting going to come from, specifically the three-point shooting. Who do you think are our best shooters? Like, you feel good every time they shoot a three.
Okay. Good, great question. And he struggled last night. I think he was 2-of-7 overall. If I'm asking someone, if I'm putting my money on a guy that needs to make a three, I'm going with McVay.
Okay.
Okay, McVay's my first draft pick when it comes to three-point land.
He's in my list as well.
My second draft pick is Glenn.
Okay.
Glenn was tough. I think he hit a couple, but overall, I mean, the guy only took less than 10 shots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Webster wasn't being efficient. Webster got his 19. I get that, but part of this credit needs to go to Michigan State too, because they're all over Watson.
Yeah.
Watson couldn't get loose, and that's an issue. I will continue answering your question here in a second, but you're not going to win against Sparty or games in the Big Ten when you don't have, we've said it and say it in unison in chorus here, that third score or a fourth score. And you had Taylor get his 10, and he was actually pretty efficient from the floor last night. And then you had a volume scoring effort by Webster, but Glenn was with 8. If you're going to go beat Michigan State on the road or even at home, Glenn's got to get you 15, and it's got to be an efficient 15. Jacobson and Ed got to be, one of them got to be at double digits, and they both got to be in double-digit rebounds. Okay. And that didn't happen last night. Jordy, stat-wise, was okay, but he wasn't as effective as he needed to be. And if you're going to beat Michigan State, you need Jordy, you need Jacobson, you need Ed, all the combined for at least 30 points and 20 rebounds, 25 rebounds. You didn't even sniff that. Mm-hmm. And your outside shot was not existent. For the second half they scored, but it was more,
yeah,
let's just make it look better. You were out of the game.
Yeah, and you wonder how much Michigan State was trying on defense when they had such a big lead.
Right, they were out of it. So your three-point draft for me is McVay and then Watson. I think Ty's okay from the corner. That seems to be where he's most comfortable, kind of a fade-away corner shot.
Corner wing, yep.
But, yeah, corner wing. But other than that, those are the two I feel best about with Nebraska taking threes. Horn's been okay, but he's very streaky. And even Horn last night, I think he went 2 for 6. So you just had they shot awful. They shot under 30% in the first half. And that's Nebraska not knocking down shots. That's Michigan State really focusing in and obviously having confidence from the first meeting they had, because Nebraska had a hard time scoring for certain at PBA against Sparty.
So I agree with you. I would add Horn and as part of my three, the three shooters I feel comfortable. Glenn Watson is shooting 42% from three. That is amazing. With already amount
does it
of stuff
feel
he's doing
and
on
seem
offense.
Like that?
To me, it does.
Okay.
I feel like Glenn hits a lot of threes.
Okay.
Jack McVay is hitting 36%. That's pretty good.
See, I would,
but
see,
he needs
I would
to be
say,
in the 40s. That's the guy.
Jack, see, I would have flip-flopped the percentages.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like Jack has hit quite a few threes and hit some big threes, and I'm thinking of the wins, and I'm thinking of the Ohio State. I'm thinking of the Iowa game. I'm thinking of, I mean, how well Jack hit against Purdue.
Yeah, but you know, we also remember that stretch in the non-con where he couldn't hit anything.
Right.
He was just mired in a slump.
Sure.
And I would put Dry Horn in there. He's shooting 33%. I think as a freshman, that's pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, up and down, but I think that's pretty good. So I bring that up because those to me are our best shooters from three-point land. For this season and for next season. The problem is, next season, I'm not sure there are many shooters. We've talked about the talent on this team. I love the talent, but I'm not sure there's a lot of shooters on this team. Ty Webster, he'll be gone, but he's shooting 31% from three. That's not bad. Your next highest after that, Anton Gill, 28%. Michael Jacobson, 18%. Isaiah Roby, 18%. Evan Taylor, 11%. Like, I kind of cringe when those guys shoot a three every time just because...
Guess what?
They're
don't
not
shoot,
maybe confident.
Don't shoot a three.
And here are the...
Drive.
Yeah.
Drive to the freaking rim, and they did not get to the rim last night.
You do, but you also need to have space to be able to create easy driving lanes for your team, so I agree with that. And here are the guys that are sitting out that will be playing next year. James Palmer. Career 33% from three. Not bad, but he shot 28% his sophomore year. Isaac Copeland, career 29%. He shot 0%.
He's a slasher.
He's more of a slasher. And Anton Gill, who's sitting out at the end, career 26%. Nana Akinton, I couldn't find his three-point stats.
That's okay. Tried.
I've watched his highlights. He seems to have a decent shot from three. So
you've got guys to space the floor. You do. But here's,
you have three for sure.
Here's,
with Glenn, McVay, and Horn.
What I like best about Glenn is when he's creating. I mean, they'll get him shots for three, but I like when he's going off the dribble and he's hitting the mid-range.
For sure.
Or he's saying, screw it, and I'm getting to the rim. How many times did he get to the rim last night?
Not as much.
Again, part of that's Michigan State, but it seems like Nebraska goes in these funks sometimes where they do settle. They just settle for a mid-range or a jump shot versus forcing the issue at the rim. And I'm not asking for volunteers driving in against Miles Bridges. There's better ways to make a living. I get that. I get you got to give some credit to the green and white.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't like Nebraska in the first half shot-wise. And even if they were trying to get closer to the rim, it wasn't falling. So there was really no great answer last night. But I think you have guys that can create. I think Glenn can create.
Yep.
I think Taylor can. I've liked what he's done, and you've not seen it as much. But whenever he's put the ball on the deck, I think he's done a pretty good job. And
yeah,
his mid-range pull-up. I think Gill's strength will be the ability to drive and get to the rim versus what we've seen from him from the outside. The guys that can spot up for you, I mean, Jacobson, when he's been on and been effective, they've either been tip-ins off of misses, their offensive rebounds, or his most comfortable shot isn't getting the ball on the block and making a move. It's when someone kicks it out and he squares up to the right or the left or at the free throw line, kind of that mid-range stretch shot. inside the three-point line. That's where he's best offensively, and you didn't see that. And then Ed's just kind of a junkyard dog around the rim.
Yeah.
And he's a putback guy.
He can hit the occasional elbow jumper.
The occasional elbow jumper. But what thrives with this team is when Ty's driving and distributing, or Glenn's getting a screen and distributing, either the pull-up or finding a teammate. And I didn't see that last night, where guys were going off the dribble, finding a teammate.
And I agree with that. Like, when we started 3-0 in the conference, it was so easy getting to the lane. I remember that Indiana game.
And I know,
like,
people are going to adjust to you.
Yeah,
I know they will.
And they're going to adjust to you. I just think this offseason, I think they really need to focus on so many shooting drills. It helps the offense so much more when you can space it out and you have guys that are able to hit outside shots. So right now, I think it could be a problem going into next season, even how talented you are.
Well, but you're going to have better production, you would think, if things move forward.
Yep.
And you get better.
Agreed.
With Ed down low. Maybe Jacobson will find
Jordy.
It. And then for sure, Jordy. But what you have out on the perimeter is a guy that can either drive, or someone driving and kicking to an open Horn, or driving and kicking to Jack, okay? Or driving and kicking out elbow inside three-point land to Jacobson. Because Jacobson's really, what he's done with his body is he's a stretch guy. He wants to be kind of a catch-and-shoot guy. He's been better at that. And then let him obviously go attack the glass down low. So a tough one last night for Nebraska. It was over the final 3 minutes. Nebraska doesn't score. Sparty goes on a 23-5. Let's put you to sleep run. Bill Dolman, the Pride of Fairbury, next on Hail Varsity Radio.
Former black shirt, Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jay Bird will be back next week. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, hope you're well on a Friday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. 1 hour from now, Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report. Get his take on the mess that is Ole Miss football. And we'll talk some Husker spring ball with him, Brandon Vogel, in less than an hour. Welcome in the Pride of Fairbury, Nebraska. And you know him with NBC Sports, Bill Dolman, at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Billy D, I missed you last week for my birthday. I appreciate the Blu-ray copy of Spartacus. How are you?
I could not be more tired.
You tell me what. You've been doing NBC Olympic coverage, Olympic event coverage of skiing, and it's pretty apropos for the state of Nebraska right now, because it's pretty much snowy and whiteout conditions in some areas and some instances, and you've been calling sports in it. How are you doing?
Well, just everybody should just stay home and watch the World Nordic Championships from Lahti, Finland on the networks of NBC. We have it's like day two, I think, or day three. I'm a little bleary right now, but no, it's been great. It's a great assignment, and what better background to have than to be from Nebraska to call Nordic Championships like ski jumping and cross country and things like that. So, but it's going on right now, and you woke me up in the middle of the night right now to lift my suspension. We did. I did.
So it's 3 a.m. and I woke you up in Finland. I'm so considerate.
Part of the fact that I'm in Denver, but
right.
Our first show was this morning at 1:30. We did another one, I think, at 4:30, and another one at 8:30, and tomorrow will be the 3 hours of skiathlon, cross country skiing, and then the men's ski jumping, and all that will take place basically from 1 to 10 o'clock in the morning.
Dolman, I was closing O Street down at 1:30, and I was leaving the highway dying over at 4 a.m. So I guess I could have called you then.
It would have been fine, absolutely.
well, good. I got to ask you here. You're a big Tim Miles guy. You were close with him at Colorado State. People wanted your take when it came to Tim to Nebraska, and I'm sure you read Lee Barfnik's column this week. It's been a discussion we've kind of had ongoing this week on the show, and it's kind of popped up where I really wasn't worried or concerned about if Tim Miles was coming back or not. I kind of assumed he is and think he should, but there's been no definite given by the athletic director other than some positive words and statements by Tim Miles and Sean Eichhorst that they're both on the same page. So things sound like they're cool. But what was your take on Lee in Lee's column?
Well, first of all, I know that there are those who that there are big camps on the love-hate Lee Barfnik camps.
Right.
Let me just tell you, there are very few sports writers in the country as good as Lee Barfnik. Okay, so I don't think he's going to write that article without there being some smoke somewhere. Or just being smart enough to put two and two together and go, why is this not happening? In terms of coming out and saying this is our coach and this is the way it's going to be. So I don't think he just plucked out of the air and thought, oh, you know what, I'm just going to write an article about this. To me, there's something that was simmering that
he's connected enough. He wrote it for a reason.
Exactly. I'm mystified. I was stunned. I'm borderline angry when I read the article. And I tweeted, why is this even a debate? I don't understand. To me, yeah, okay, there's the Boston Gardner-Webb, the incarnate word. Got it, okay? Nebraska's not going to run the table. Those are awful losses. But I've watched enough basketball in my lifetime and enough Nebraska basketball in my lifetime, and enough Nebraska basketball this season to know what a good basketball team should look like, or what a basketball team should look like, for God's sakes. And even back in the opening weekends when Nebraska lost to UCLA, that game was a battle right down to the final, probably 2 minutes or even deeper into the game. And Nebraska loses by 13, I think it was. But you look at the athletes on the floor that Steve Alford had and that Tim Miles had, and that looked comparable. All right. He had more experience than Nebraska, but UCLA goes on. They rank number two for a while. But Nebraska has the players in place after building from the basement up to have a foundation for this program to continue to go forward. The fact that there isn't, some type of and they can say each other, everything is great, and right now, because they have, they might as well move forward and what is it, guarantee a 6th year or whatever they're looking for.
Give them the 5-year window, right?
Give them the 5-year window, because now if there's a move made after this year, or if Tim goes after all he said, now it looks really awkward. Like, yeah, Lee was right. There's a problem. So to me, I can't believe it's a debate. They play hard. They play knowledgeably. There has been some incredible misfortune. I mean, Glenn Watson slips against Ohio State, but comes back and they win on the road at Ohio State. The injuries this year, Morrow, Gill, for what they have done this year with the bad luck, and then to look forward with the talent, I can't believe that this is even a debate. They should, if you get rid of Tim Miles, who I think is one of the reasons why, or you let him go, that building has been packed the way it is. He's made Nebraska basketball personable. All right, we all like Danny Neal was a very likable guy, very blue. And off the cuff,
he brought Budweiser to my college radio
right.
show. I love Danny.
But people like Danny Neal, okay? And people love Tim Miles. And I think there's a personal connection to the program that perhaps has never, ever been there before. Doc Sadler's a great guy. Barry Collier's a bit aloof, very professorial, very Osborne-like, if you will. But the reason that building is full is in part because Tim Miles' personality sold it 3-4 years ago. And you get rid of him, let me tell you, there's talk about buying out Tom Crean, all right? Now, they're going to shoot for the stars like Nebraska does in football when they think they need to make a coaching change, and they think they're going to bring Phil Jackson out of retirement. They think Bob Knight's going to come back. They think Krzyzewski and Roy Williams are going to get married in Indiana and become, the head coach. That's what they think there, right? Okay, but I'll guarantee you, after they get shot down enough, that they would love to have Tim Miles be the head coach at Indiana. I will guarantee it. And people would go, well, I don't get it, but they have beaten us a couple of times, right?
Sure.
And they do play hard. They've won in this building. You know what? He might make Indiana basketball personable again. And then let's say you make a swap for it. Tom Crean might be a great basketball coach, but he looks like the angriest guy on the sidelines. And all of a sudden, you've got a program that's aloof at Nebraska. It's great. You got a big name, but he didn't win in Indiana, right?
Right.
So, and he's gotten beat by the guy, by Tim Miles. I'm not saying that swap's going to happen, but I could just see it in my mind that what if down the road? And it just mystifies me that it's a debate.
Bill, would you agree?
Other than that, I don't have an opinion.
About 3 minutes left here, Billy D.
Bill, would you agree that with the Collier and Sadler era, it felt like it was the end? It felt like maybe they had run their course, and it just feels a bit unfinished with Miles is where he's at right now. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think Barry Collier was dealt an awful hand by the NCAA, and you got to go back a ways, and you got to go into the, you know, kind of deep into the weeds as to what was going on legislatively with college basketball. And nobody but Barry Collier and Jim Woolridge at Kansas State were affected by the 8-5 rule, where you couldn't sign any more than five guys in 1 year or any more than eight people in 2 years, okay? So both of those guys inherit programs that essentially were a mess, and they could not rebuild with scholarships over a two-year period. So Barry could bring in five guys that first year, and he signed in like the three of us, and he came in April after the Final Four. All the signing has been done, and it's guys like us who are left over. So he could sign five of us in 1 year, and then the next year, all he could sign the scholarships were three, even though guys were leaving the program. So Barry Collier was really hamstrung, and it was unfair. Now, was he personable? Probably not. But is he a great basketball coach? Was he well-respected at the time? Absolutely. But I don't think we really know the full potential of what he could have done here just based on the fact of that rule. And the same goes for Jim Woolridge at K-State. Doc Sadler is a great guy. And I think that he had to build out of the basement like Tim Miles did. Unfortunately, the move was made. But Doc's a great guy. He's a well-respected coach. He's personable. He's great to talk to. It just didn't work for him. But right now, you got the guy in place that could make it work, and has been, if you ask me.
Bill Dolman with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Bill, about 90 seconds. Coach Osborne turned 80 yesterday. Did you ever get T.O. a birthday gift?
No. But you know what really stunned me when I thought about that was how young he was when he stepped down in 1997.
Yep, 60.
You know, that to me, to think about that, how many more years could he have gone? And I don't think there's any question that it could have been at least another 10. He decided to take those side jobs as a congressman and, you know, athletic director.
Side jobs.
But, you know, to think that he could have gone at least another 10 years when he stepped down.
Yeah.
That to me is amazing. I haven't been around Tom for many years now, but I always, whenever I see a story about him in the paper that he's interviewed, I stop and I read it. Yeah, I might read it twice. A, out of nostalgia, but B, because I know whatever he's going to say is smart and it's on point. And, you know, Nebraska's had, you know, no better representative for its state than him, and college football and the profession of coaching has had no better leader than Tom Osborne. So happy birthday to Coach and for all, and thanks to all he's meant for me and all of us.
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Bill Dolman with us, Hail Varsity Radio, the pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports. Bill, about 30 seconds. Where can folks watch you this weekend?
Well, really all over. I mean, it's saving the world through sportscasting as usual. NBC's got coverage on the Universal HD Network,
okay,
on NBCSN, and online. We are live online, streaming on NBC early in the morning hours.
We'll be watching.
It's fun. It's great stuff. It's beautiful sports with great vistas, and Team USA has done okay.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Many thanks to Bill Dolman as his sleep schedule's vampire-ish. Coming up, Lars Anderson, 40 minutes away. Brandon Vogel, 20 minutes away. Hope you're all right on a Friday. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. All right, let's talk quarterbacks for the Big Ten. And by default, is Nebraska just behind Wisconsin and Northwestern when it comes to Big Ten West quarterbacks? Think about it. Iowa, new quarterback. Illinois, new quarterback. Blau's pretty good at Purdue, but it's Purdue. So we have Thorson at Northwestern. You have the lefty who threw two picks, and God forgive me, his name's escaping me. It's not Bart.
Hornibrook?
Hornibrook. Thank you, sir. Well done. So you had Hornibrook, and then Nebraska has the quarterback question marks. Now, is that your biggest concern on offense, is the quarterback spot for Nebraska? And I look at it like, you know what? And we'll talk with Vogues about this, too, but what your thoughts, TJ, can chime in also, 466-3776. Do you have this okay feeling about Nebraska at the quarterback spot? And listen, you got Tanner Lee, P.O.B., and then Tristan. And I just love the options. You don't have to throw a true freshman in there.
Mm-hmm.
You got a redshirt freshman that spent time going on the road and was your emergency number three. And then you got a guy like Tanner Lee that is, while it's not Big Ten football, has spent time on scout team, has developed a relationship with some guys, has shown kind of what he's made of, and that there's a lot of talent about that NFL dudes are raving about.
Mm-hmm.
Still got to go do it on the field. But I guess I'm not as concerned about the quarterback spot. However it shakes out, whoever's taken snaps will have done enough to impress Mike Riley and Danny Langsdorf. And I think moving forward, you're going to have square peg, square slot, okay? Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm extremely optimistic that a quarterback, there's a choice that race needs to be won, and whoever gets it'll be all good. I just think it'll be okay, and it can be difference-making. At worst, you got a guy that's going to be hopefully smart with the football and can just move the chains. At best, You got a guy making throws and killing a defense. If you get a happy medium between that, you're going to be all right, theoretically.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about the quarterback situation as well. I mean, those comments you heard from Billy Devaney a couple weeks ago about Tanner Lee, and then all the stuff you've heard and seen from Tanner Lee at practice, I mean, it sounds like he could possibly be the real deal. And then obviously you have Patrick O'Brien there waiting in the wings, who has a year under his belt now and highly recruited. And then same with Jebby, highly recruited. And look at all the stats he put up in high school. I mean, phenomenal out there in California. So that's a position I feel pretty good about. And Langsdorf and Riley are going to finally have their system, it feels like, for those guys. I guess my most major area of concern for the offense would be the offensive line, just because we didn't see maybe the push on that from them. But maybe they're going to be a better pass protection offensive line than rushing offensive line. What do you think about that?
I think that's a mindset. I'm going to go caveman here.
Okay.
Just kind of, you sparked me here. I don't think you win football games consistently in the fourth quarter if you're a passive offensive line. What I mean by passive is your first step forward where you're firing off the ball,
mm-hmm.
or is your first step back to protect. As good as you need to be in this offense as pass protectors, and you mm-hmm. do, your first emphasis and priority needs to be aggressiveness.
I don't disagree with that.
It needs to be moving forward, and it needs to be, even if you're a much better passing team, your mindset needs to be we're a run the football team. Okay, so if They can sling it around a million times if they want. You're not going to win without balance. And to win with balance, you need to be good and effective and consistent and dependable at running the football. And if the guy's first step on the offensive line, 1 through 5, is always back versus firing off, that's going to be an issue. It's going to be an issue in the fourth quarter against Iowa. It's going to be an issue against Ohio State. It's going to be an issue against some teams that just don't screw around, against Wisconsin. You're going to need to be able to run the football. And if you choose to run the football as a complement to what you're great at, and that's throwing the ball, still make the defense respect you and even fear you with your ability to run. Think about Wisconsin for a second. Let's talk Wisconsin.
Okay.
They are a pro style. They throw the football. But when push comes to shove, man, they do damage to you running the ball. Ohio State does damage to you running the football. Iowa, what has screwed people up with them, and even Michigan State. What has been so good with their quarterbacks is the play action and the ability to kind of roll out and find a tight end, do some bootleg stuff. That's what Nebraska wants to be, but it's all set up and predicated based on what you do running the football.
I agree with you 100%. You saw last year, it was just a struggle to run with this offensive line, and you're returning 4 to 5 starters from the line that struggled. Now, granted, some of those guys might not be starting. You might see some of those talented redshirt freshmen getting in there, and maybe they can provide a little bit of punch. But right now, I just think pass protection-wise, that's what they're going to focus heavily on. But obviously, you got to be able to run the ball in the Big Ten.
No, you do. And I think that's going to continue to be emphasized. And let's talk attitude, too. What have you heard about these redshirt freshmen? They're mean, they're nasty, their attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Their attitude kind of matches up to what Gates is, kind of matches up to what Foster's supposed to be. And Farmer was mean and rough and tough when he was healthy. So do you get a guy like Raritan in at center that, I mean, people meaning his offensive line coach and guys around the program, rave about just what kind of a nasty, mean dude he is. Give me that attitude and mindset of that they're going to just keep hammering you. They're going to finish blocks. They're going to physically dominate you. And you can be a physical, tough pass protector, but it's more about kind of reacting and keeping your guy clean than it is squaring somebody up and smoking them like a double team on a defensive tackle if you're a center and a guard. You know, Gates is, there's been times where he's gone out and led plays.
Oh, for sure.
And even in the passing game, You can utilize an aggressiveness with the offensive line in the screen game. I mean, think about that. If it's set up and executed well, you got 200 or 300 pound fat guys, talented fat men, running downfield, ready to maul a corner and a linebacker. I mean, they love that. Guys are either running out of the way or they're pancaked once you get your hands on them. So you can be physical too in the pass game. But a lot of times it's set up with your screen game when they can get out and lead block for you that route. But, yeah, first step's got to be forward and aggressive, and that's what I need this spring. We'll wind down hour one on Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Excited to talk to Brandon Vogel at hailvarsity.com and magazine in 10 minutes. 30 minutes away, Lars Anderson, Friday forecast coming up, and want to remind you about your seatbelt, specifically in weather like today, but beyond. If you decide to make a quick trip to the store, you climb into the driver's seat, you start the car, and that seatbelt indicator blinks and sounds, and you said, you know what, I'm good. Well, think about it. You're not the only one that suffers if you don't wear your seatbelt. Family, friends, coworkers suffer if you're injured or killed in a crash. Click it or ticket now, reducing injuries, saving lives. Does so every day when you buckle up. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. 466-377-6800 825-5865. We spent some time talking quarterbacks and what you kind of want to see from spring here in a week. I want to see no snow on the ground in a week when they practice for the first time. Teej, what do you got rocking this weekend here? Plenty of basketball. Are you locked in? I know usually we get to this in an hour, but I'm just wondering here what's on the TJ agenda this weekend. Are you watching Animal House?
Wasn't on the to-do list.
Do I need to bring that in tomorrow morning for the weekend edition?
You can do it. I will say, though, people have been known to give me DVDs, and I do not give them back until years later. I get them back.
It's one of my favorites.
Okay. So I don't know if that's the best suggestion.
I think it's on,
I get on Netflix or Amazon Prime?
It was on Netflix.
Maybe I'll put that on the to-do list. NBA's back, so I'll watch some of that. Nebraska-Illinois on Sunday. We have girls and boys basketball, I believe, this weekend. So kind of rocking it out with that stuff.
Okay.
How about you?
I have a big weekend planned of juniors basketball team.
Right.
Tonight at 7, tomorrow at 7.
Playing those Dirty Titans anytime soon again?
No, your freaking third grade team beat our kids. They're all about 2 feet tall. They have crossover moves that are insane. And they have one kid that's... I'm serious.
Should you be 2 feet in third grade?
I don't know, but they can shoot. There's two kids. It was a two-man show. And they did some ball screens. They hit threes. And then they have one dude in there that is great at post-position ceiling. Mm-hmm. And he's maybe 7. He's missing a tooth because, the tooth fairy said, I'll pay you. No,
just knows how to seal it, huh? Just like Alex Marsh. He's going to be back in town for the Legends weekend. First time in 11 years.
I got a kick out of Alex.
Loved me some Marich, man.
He had the backpack rocking all the time. Always had the double straps going.
Mm-hmm.
Bill,
did he wear the high white socks? I'm trying to
remember. Yeah, he did.
Yes.
The thing about Goldman went back to the Collier era, and while he was talking about the 8-5 rule, I wanted him to go into like year one of the Collier era, okay? Because he still had knee players.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when we were doing college radio. And Kamani Friend and Stephon Bradford like hated each other.
Okay.
So urban legend has it where there's a practice going on at the Vanny, and Kamani said something that ticked off Bradford, and Bradford was like from Watts or Compton, one of the two. And Kamani's a dude from the islands.
Mm-hmm.
So Stephon like just walks out of practice, goes and grabs a tire iron or something from his truck and comes back and starts swinging it at Kamani. I did not witness this.
Oh, man.
But I heard it before they lost to Colorado 1 year, and it was very, very heartbreaking.
I hope that was true.
This is a non-Chauncey Billups Colorado team. Hour two coming up.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Welcome to Post Time on a Friday. Great to have you. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hour two, we're 30 minutes away from Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report, New York Times bestselling author. His thoughts on Nebraska spring football from SEC country. His thoughts on Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss from SEC country. But first, we love talking football and life with Hail Varsity's Brandon Vogel. At Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Can log on hailvarsity.com and read Vogue's hot reads. Can see the newest issue of Hail Varsity. Want to get you primed and ready for spring 2017. Vogue's, how you doing, man? Great to have you in on this Friday. What's new, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing okay, and we've kind of run the gamut between the Nebraska-Michigan State game last night, and then TJ and I got into talking some quarterback, and then it turned into offensive line discussion because I'm kind of hung up on the offensive line this year. I'm really excited about it. I'm intrigued by it. I want to go there with you, but first let's touch on something you wrote and I love the title of it, Searching for Misters Inside and Outside. How about those lovely linebackers that Coach Diaco's looking for and has to get in the right spot? Tell me a little bit about, folks missed it on your latest post on HaleVarsity.com. Man, those inside and outside backers are something that could be super beneficial and difference-making for Nebraska.
Yeah, well, they're really sort of the key to a 3-4 defense to making that thing go. And not to, I guess, put too much onto it, but I don't think that that's a mass exaggeration.
Let's heap all of the hype on it.
Basically, position preview, look at some of the guys that are probably in contention. You know, when I look at Nebraska's defense starting spring practice here eight days from today, you know, it all seems like still sort of a big mystery, and I think there's going to be a lot of sorting out to do. But for folks who are thinking about that, who fits where, you know, your inside linebackers are sort of your classic, your head knockers, sort of like your traditional 4-3 middle linebacker, and you know, Nebraska has some good candidates there. It gets really intriguing when you start to look at the outside, which is kind of a hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker, you know, primary pass rusher in that scheme. And you've got a guy like Marcus Newby who already sort of fits the bill. Quayshon Alexander was kind of that guy coming out of high school. I think he's going to have a really big spring. And that's before you even get into, you know, looking at moving a guy like Freedom McMullenden or Alex Davis back there. You know, they're up at traditional D end weight right now, but if you were to look at those guys as draft prospects, that's probably where they'd be.
Mm-hmm. Vogues, we talked about the offensive line, as Schmidt mentioned earlier. With this offensive line, it didn't seem like we had a really great push last year running the ball, but with the offense kind of switching more to pocket passing, do you think this offensive line has the capability of being a pretty good pass protecting squad?
I think so. I think that's a strength of Coach Kavanaugh's anyway. And, you know, I think part of the reason I don't worry about Nebraska's quarterback battle. Now, I'm interested to see how it unfolds and who ends up winning the job. But it's virtually impossible for Nebraska to complete a lower percentage of passes than it did last year. And I think in this offense in particular, just being able to complete sort of the throws that are there more consistently will make a big, big difference. And you could notice it on the offensive line as well. I think you could notice it in the run game. Now, that said, I'm still looking to see a more, I guess, dominant offensive line when it comes to blocking the run game. They're really going to need that because I don't know about you guys, but when you look at the running back room now, there's some good options there. But you don't have the guy that's sort of proven to be the traditional home run hitter yet.
Vogues, forgive me just because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the completion percentage, what was it this past year?
I don't remember offhand either. Okay. It was, you know, just a little north of 50%.
Oh, boy.
So down from the first year of the Riley era overall. So, you know, the key really for the quarterback will be, because I think they're going to naturally complete closer to 60. In fact, I think they should probably be over 60 if things are working. Can they avoid the interceptions? That'll be the second piece to that. And, you know, when you look at Tanner Lee, we've heard a lot of really effusive praise about him. But you look at those numbers from Tulane, and one of the ones that jumps out is the interceptions were a little bit high.
Let's go into Tanner Lee for a second. And what do you think Nebraska has right now? And I'll give you my quick 2 cents, and then I want yours. I think they've got a guy that is going to be followed by his teammates. I mean, I think he proved himself and showed himself well on scout team. So I think they're first and foremost got to have a guy that their teammates want to follow at quarterback. I think Nebraska's got a guy guys can buy into with that. Two, I think it's similar to a Riley situation where the hope and assumption is you're going to do more with more, okay? You go from Oregon State to Nebraska, things should be better for you from a recruiting and a talent standpoint. You go from Tulane to Nebraska, things should be better. And I think his experience is going to help him maybe be settled. Now, I think everybody probably gets nervous before Ohio State or Wisconsin, but by that time, or even by Oregon, I think he'll be able to settle down and just kind of do his thing. He doesn't have to be great, but he needs to be competent, and I think this offense will allow him to do so.
Yeah, I think those are, you know, legitimate starting points. I'll confess, I don't claim to know much about the guy at this point, because the multiplier, I guess, that you're talking about going from Tulane to Nebraska could be real. But I look at the numbers and compare them to the praise and sort of say, well, there seems to be a little bit of a gap here. I think when I look at him, I know you have is a guy who checks a lot of the physical boxes in terms of what, you know, pro scouts are looking for in terms of a quarterback. Has all of that, has the arm, has the height, has the sort of body type. But we'll see. I think the biggest thing will just be accuracy. And if he can, whoever is most accurate as Nebraska goes into its first game of the season next year, is going to be the one that plays. And if you've got that, you can probably buy yourself time to do things that none of these quarterbacks have done, which is play a game at Nebraska, first of all, much less go into, you know, a sort of a hostile Big Ten road environment.
Well, just complete the three. I mean, that's the beauty of this offense, right? I mean, best case scenario, upside, however you want to deem it or term it. And then, you know, I mean, West Coast guys or pro style coaches we've talked to over the years, and they just kind of smile at it and go, there's always a completion to be had. And I'm thinking of Gary Barnett. You know, back when 3 years ago when this move was made, he just kind of smiled and said, there's always somebody open in this offense. There's throws to be made and easy throws to be had where you can get 5 yards just by checking and dumping it down to your tight end or back. And obviously you take advantage of the matchups you have with DPE and Stanley, because they're really talented at what they do if all things are clicking. I mean, that's, I guess, what gives me some optimism. And I think if you're a Nebraska fan, while still wanting to be dominant running the football, by default, shouldn't it be second and six all the time if you're not bad with the football?
It really should be. I mean, it's a question of decision making, essentially. You try to put defenders in conflict. And if you've got a quarterback that knows the offense and is good at diagnosing that stuff on the fly, you're right. Those easy throws are there. We've seen a lot of Nebraska receivers over the past 2 years. It always feels like what you said, someone is open. You just got to find the guy and make the right throw. It's sort of sitting back there and just picking and choosing. So not to make it sound too simple, it's a lot more difficult when you've got, you know, a 275-pound defensive end bearing down on you.
Someone's angry.
That's really what it is.
So, folks, I went to look up the completion percentage numbers from Nebraska this past season with Tommy Riker and Darlington. It was 50.3% compared to, in 2015, 56%. Now, I know you did that long stat, I think, last summer about maybe individual quarterbacks and how much they can improve their completion percentage over their 4 years.
Yeah.
But as a team, going down 5-6%, that seems like a huge regression, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a big drop. That's a bigger drop than I thought. I was pretty confident they were around 50. I didn't know that they were at 50, or I didn't remember that they were at 56 the year before. Those gains, when you look at it at an individual level, become pretty small. Like, everyone assumes, okay, well, freshman quarterbacks should be significantly better as a junior. They'll be a little bit better. So that'll be a key thing to keep in mind as this race gets underway. Kind of what you see from these guys in your first impression may not be all that different from what you see 2, 3, or 4 years down the road, depending on which guy it is.
Vogue's fair to say, too, when you look at that 6-6.5% completion percentage drop, it's fair to say, too, though, part of that reasoning is, didn't they kind of drill down this last year with play selection and play calling in the passing game?
Yeah, I think so. You felt it like it was a little bit more tailored specifically to Tommy's running ability than it was the first year, which makes sense. You had a season under your belt to do that. You know, and some of them may have just come down. You'd have to look this up, but they may have played a little bit stronger defenses this year. They also may not have. So that's always one thing to keep in mind with that, too. Strength of schedule can influence those numbers a little bit.
I think it does, and I also think how far you were behind against Iowa and against Ohio State, and just some really tough passing days like you had against Indiana, even though you won that one. You had some really, really tough completion percentage days against three decent defenses. Brandon Vogel with us. A few more minutes here on Hail Varsity Radio. Vogues, let's talk recruiting for a second, and we had a chance to have Justin Pearson studio Wednesday with the Alabama Recruiting Bible. Loved going through that. Loved seeing what Saban kind of put out there. So Nebraska will likely enhance their recruiting department when it comes to staff support. They've already got guys on campus here that are evaluating and looking at kids. What's a ideal number for you? If Brandon Vogel puts on the big red Nebraska hat and is asked about, all right, what do we do here for a recruiting staff? What's a number for you? How many guys do you put on staff in addition to what you already have with Devaney and some of the support guys?
Well, I think you, with that sort of endeavor, you look for a lot of people who are, for lack of a better term, willing to work cheaply. You know, and there's
you look
a
for
ton
bargains.
Of college students, you know, who would love to be able to do a little bit of sort of the grunt and organizational work just to be part of it. You know, people who are maybe in some of the coaching classes that Nebraska offers and looking to go that route would be a natural fit. I think you could really start a department with two or three guys that you really believed in that were sort of like your organizational people. They're saying, this is what we're going to do. And then fill it in with, you know, 10, 15, however many of those sort of part-time, maybe interns, however you end up structuring it, people that can help you identify guys and really be smart about things.
That would make sense. And also, maybe you have the current guys here now, and maybe you look at four additional guys on top of the intern above volunteer numbers, too, obviously on campus, guys that want to be a part of the program that are college students. But I think if you had four guys or even six, you have one for the line, the quarterback, and then the skill set people on offense, and then you have one for every level of the defense, so six total. Does that number make sense?
Yeah, I think that's right about there. You know, when I think about launching a department and why Nebraska is looking at that and sort of what they face, I would look for more than a known name, a real blockbuster ideas guy. Like if Nebraska brought in a 28-year-old that nobody had ever heard of, but who's doing things and willing to look at recruiting differently and use some of the tools that are emerging, you know, when you look at, I guess, well, there's a group of Northwestern students that have started a business where you can look at people's social media profiles and it basically comes back with a score of, okay, this is how likely this guy is to be interested in Nebraska. You know, there's a lot of sort of cutting edge ideas that are starting to emerge. If Nebraska's going to have an entire recruiting staff, I think you need to have at least one of those guys on that staff.
Vogues, about 45 seconds. It's not nice anymore here in the great state of Nebraska weather-wise, so I won't ask you for drink of the week. But any thoughts on barbecuing this weekend? Are you doing some pulled pork? You doing some ribs? What are you thinking?
I had thought about it, and I still might do it on Sunday. Because I picked up some spare ribs really cheap at the store the other week ago. But I did just get done making my own ramen noodles. So that'll be the immediate plan is ramen either tonight or tomorrow. And then we'll see about barbecue on Sunday.
How does one make his own ramen? I tried it twice, and I just saved my money for Lazari's every Friday. I'm not going to lie, when I was in college.
It's not too hard. The key is you need to sort of take baking soda and turn it into an alkaline soda. Ah. So you have to bake it for about an hour, and then you just, you know, water, flour, roll it out.
There we go.
Into noodles.
Vogues, you are awesome. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning for the weekend edition. Thank you for a few minutes today.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, Vogues is hanging tight. He'll be back in 15 minutes on the forecast. Up next, Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report, New York Times bestselling author. The lowdown on Ole Miss and how much heat they're under. Lars Anderson next.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio at JMoore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back to it on a Friday. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Excited to get caught up with Lars Anderson. Bleacher Report at Lars Anderson 71 on Twitter. New York Times bestselling author. Lars, you're a native Nebraskan. Have you ever experienced thunder snow?
Years ago, yes. But there's a reason why I now live in the South, and it is to avoid snowstorms in February and March. And I had my fill growing up in Lincoln and then going to college in Minnesota. But, hey, I my heart is with you.
Yeah, you're walking out of a high school gym and there's thunder snow going on. I bet you did crush.
It's about 70. It's 75 and sunny today in Birmingham. I'm going to see if I can squeeze in 18 later on this afternoon.
Yeah, really, well, I could have squeezed in 18 2 days ago when it was 75 and sunny in Lincoln, but it's not anymore. Lars, let's talk some college football. Spring ball's around the corner, and Nebraska gets going next Saturday. Interesting thoughts on Ole Miss as the NCAA is laying out more statements to the University of Mississippi. You have Mr. Freeze. You had a ton of success and high-profile recruits back in 13, 14, and Ole Miss became a player in college football, going 2-1 against Bama. The history is well noted. Now the NCAA, it sounds and seems like they're closing in on Ole Miss. Lars, what's your reaction to what's going on?
Well, I've spent a lot of time in the last 3-4 years at Ole Miss in Oxford. One, researching my book on the Mannings, and two, I've done a couple pieces on specifically on Hugh Freeze. And I've always found Hugh to be a really good guy. And that was actually one of the theme of one of the long profiles I did on him back in 2015, I think, was just how, you know, he's a nice guy and he looks like he's going to finish first kind of thing. You know, when he didn't play college football, he got married in Oxford, and on his honeymoon he drove his wife to Neyland Stadium in Tennessee, and they literally, like, the day after they got married, they broke into the field there. And in the middle of the field, his wife thinks he's going to, you know, say something poetic, but he promised her at that moment that he was going to be a head football coach at a major school one day. And, you know, it's a really, again, his own biography is very compelling. And I also know that he has been adamant to his assistants, if you cheat, I'm going to get rid of you. If I hear you're doing anything that's not right, I'm going to get rid of you. And so I personally don't think Hugh kind of knew what was going on. But the problem is that now NCAA has slapped this lack of institutional control complaint against Ole Miss. And in the past, when the NCAA does this, it usually spells the end of the head coach at that school. It's really tough for a head coach to survive a lack of institutional control allegation. In basketball, you saw Patino, he's able to survive it. And you saw Jim Boeheim, he was able to survive it. But those are sort of living legends at their schools, have a lot of support at the school. I don't know if Hugh Freeze will survive this. And, you know, right now they're at a one-year postseason ban that's costing Ole Miss $7.8 million. And if the NCAA finds that that's not sufficient and they hammer him with more penalties, one way to perhaps lessen the blow would be to get rid of Freeze. And that may be something that Ross Bjorklund, the athletic director at Ole Miss, another guy I've spent time with. Ross, several years ago, was the youngest athletic director in the history of the SEC conference. Really sharp guy, very well liked among his peers and respected in the SEC conference. And I tell you, it remains to be seen if Ross is going to be able to keep his job because of this, the seriousness of the allegations. And the problem is you have all these other member schools of the NCAA saying for years that Ole Miss was cheating. And it goes back to that stellar recruiting class that featured Laramie Tunsil and then Treadway, Laquon Treadwell. wide receiver went top five, or I'm sorry, was a first-round draft pick last year, and Robert Kendici, another, I think, early second-round draft pick of the Cardinals. And it was widely viewed as the number one recruiting class in the country, and it came out of nowhere. So everybody thought that they were cheating. And it turns out that there were some rogue boosters that were supplying these guys with cash. And, you know, again, should a few Freeze known about it? Probably. Even if he didn't, you know, there's a sort of new legislation that the NCAA abides by that says even if the coach didn't know about it, if there was a lack of institutional control, we can the coach is going to be suspended up to a year. And so it has not been a good week for Hugh Freeze, and certainly not a good week for Ole Miss. If they do get slapped with another year of postseason ban, I think you'll see a mass exodus of players, because I believe players can transfer without having to sit out if there's a two-year postseason ban. And it could just be a crippling blow to the program. And you got to remember, Ole Miss returns one of the best young quarterbacks in the country next year in Shea Patterson. And, you know, the future is actually looking kind of good for a team that's coming off a 5-7 season. They nearly beat Alabama for a third year in a row this past year. But it's really sort of been stunning to me, given what I know about Hugh Freeze and Ross Bjorklund, the athletic director, what I know of them personally. You just wouldn't expect this type of thing to happen there.
You have 21 rules violations in the NCAA. You know, Lars, you've been around college football a lot. You've covered it for decades. What do you think happens with the NCAA? Do they come back and hammer Ole Miss? And then a side question here, how much of this is Ole Miss and rogue boosters kind of went, SMU when it comes to wanting to win, and how much of it is the rest of the SEC being jealous of Ole Miss and ratting them out?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that, and that's why I think you have all these other schools, especially in the SEC conference, telling the NCAA, if you don't come down hard on these guys, what message are you sending? So there's pressure on the NCAA just to hammer Ole Miss, because, again, there's just been this suspicion that they were cheating for several years. And you know, I don't know what's going to happen. Of course, nobody does with the NCAA. I think Hugh will ultimately keep his job because he has so much support at that school. You know, he's viewed as one of their own, he's done a good job of taking a program that was absolutely irrelevant 5 years ago and turning it into a national power. It's the team that won the Sugar Bowl 2 years ago, biggest win at Ole Miss in 50 years since Archie Manning was there. And so Hugh Freeze has a lot of support. And, you know, he's basically turned over his entire staff in the last 24 months. So I think he has sort of known that there were problems. But, you know, he's not going to have many sympathetic ears at the NCAA.
Lars Anderson with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Lars, let's talk spring football. Nebraska gets going on Saturday, a week from Saturday. And quarterback is there's a lot of excitement because you have several candidates. You have a 3-4 shift defensively. Philosophically, you have 20 offensive linemen on the roster to find, you know, five really good starters and get some depth here. You know, how excited for you from afar are you about Nebraska spring football, specifically this shift here? You get a quarterback that fits Riley's offense, and you have an attacking 3-4 defense that can cause some problems with a pass rush.
Well, yeah, this is truly Mike Riley's Nebraska team. This is why Nebraska hired Mike Riley, is for this version of the team. And he's got the guy he's want behind center, and he's got all the redshirted offensive linemen. He's going to have some depth. He's got some playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, but it's all going to come down to quarterback play. And one thing that sort of, as somebody who cares about Nebraska football, when I hear all of these sort of whispers all across from across the country. I hear whispers of how good Tanner Lee is. It makes me nervous because
really,
just two years ago, Gus Malzahn at Auburn told reporters, including myself, he told anybody who would listen that Jeremy Johnson was going to be just as good as Cam Newton, and that he's actually going to be a better, NFL player. And you know, and that nearly cost Gus Malzahn his job because he hyped up Jeremy Johnson so much. And what Gus didn't realize is that Jeremy Johnson couldn't read a defense to save his life. He was a one-read quarterback. If he had to go to a second read, he just absolutely couldn't do it, and he fired the ball into coverage. And, you know, I do a radio show in Birmingham with Jay Barker, and former Alabama quarterback who led Alabama national title in 92. And Jay was, you know, we talked about it right after that game, the very first game that Jeremy started. And Jay said, this is a terminal problem that can't be fixed. And Jay was right. And it worries me that you have guys who are just saying, oh, you know, he's a scout team stud. He's a king of practice. But you know what? That means nothing. And until the bullets are flying, and yeah, he, you know, did some nice things at Tulane, but that's Tulane. That's not Nebraska. That's not Big Ten. And if I was writing for the Omaha World Herald, I would write a long, put the brakes on story on Tanner Lee, and just for the sake of the kid himself.
Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report with us, Hail Varsity Radio at Lars Anderson 71, and SEC Network, New York Times bestselling author. Lars, about 40 seconds, what do you got going this weekend aside from 75 and sunny?
I'm actually heading up to New York to have a sit down with my editors at Bleacher Report. And I'm going to be embarking on a pretty long a story that's going to take me across the country. Going to be shadowing Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and trying to understand the dynamic that exists between them. And then got also other couple football trails that I'm trying to follow, and just gearing up for the spring season.
So you're hanging with Curry and Kevin Durant. I know a 10-year-old named Carson that is jealous. I will let him know and rub it in. Lars Anderson with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Bleacher Report. Lars, you have a great weekend. Enjoy your trip, and thanks for your time as always, partner.
You bet. Good talking to you, Chris.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
It's that time, Friday forecast. The forecast is get your shovel out for snow and ice, but that's not new news. Friday forecast brought to you by the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling, and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a problem with gambling, call the statewide helpline 1-800-522-4700. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mr. Brandon Vogel back with us on Hail Varsity. And it's Claus Byrne. Claus, how are you?
Well, as you guys know, I recently completed another trip around our local star. And to my recollection, I went to bed early last night, but judging by the size of the headache I still have, wow. I was kidnapped by Carl and Barry, and we had to go out and celebrate. So I may have gone from having a pretty good fastball to looking like Rick Ankiel with these picks this week, so we'll see.
Wow. Oh, Rick Ankiel reference. Let's get to some basketball picks. All right. Let's head down to the SEC. Florida's been playing good ball. Kentucky has fallen off from what they were early in the year. And quite frankly, Kentucky owes Florida some payback for what happened in the swamp. I think they get it. I think this is a kind of a tune-up game, quite frankly, for Kentucky. Do they want to be a team that's a 3 seed teetering on a 4? Do they want to put it into overdrive and get hot? They get hot. They win by about 15. 75-60-ish is what I say. Kentucky gets the win, TJ.
Yeah, Florida's a pretty good team, but I like Kentucky at home. I think Malik Monk goes off. Kentucky 84, Florida 82.
All right, so you say it's close. I like it. Vogues, what do you think?
I think it'll be close, too. There's only about three SEC basketball games anyone wants to watch any given year. This is probably one of them. I'll take the Wildcats at home, 80-77.
Clausburn, Kentucky, or Florida?
Well, originally, I kind of thought maybe Florida would sneak up and grab one from them, but then I remembered that it's going to be a little bit difficult for them to play because I believe Florida state law requires all of their residents after the month of January to wear jorts. So I think, at least based on what I've seen when I'm there, I think Kentucky gets this one. They probably run away with it at the end and win somewhere in the neighborhood of 70-55.
All right, got to do this because it is an important showdown. Creighton at Villanova. Villanova upset earlier this week by Butler. Creighton beaten at home. Does Nova bounce back with a vengeance, or does Creighton kind of right the ship? Vogue, start us off.
Yeah, it's a tough spot here for Creighton, given the way they lost Providence and then everything else going on around that program. I'll pick Villanova here, relatively big, 79-69.
Okay. TJ?
Yeah, Creighton's bad week continues. Nova 80, Creighton 66.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a Nova blowout. They're going to be angry, they're going to be upset, and they're going to take it out on the poor little Blue Jays. 85-65, Nova wins by 20. Clausburn?
Well, it has been a really tough go for Creighton here lately, but there is some good news. All of those bandwagon Bulls fans they had can now just turn their blue sweater vests into Thunder clothes, so that's good news for them. And last time I predicted a big Creighton win, it happened, so I'm going to go ahead and predict this one that Nova's going to roll them. I can't keep that up. It's going to be probably something like 85-60.
All right, Purdue at Michigan. The Wolverines can hit from outside. They've been playing all right. This may get them off the bubble. Purdue is probably the best team in the Big Ten. They are vulnerable, though, and it's a road game for the Boilermakers. You know what, though? I'm gonna break tendency. I say the Fighting Seabasses win this just because they're a little tougher down low. Give me Purdue 70, Michigan 66. Vogues.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. You know, a big opportunity here for Michigan to sort of, as you said, gain a little bit of ground. But I think Purdue actually extends its lead on the rest of the Big Ten a little bit here. I'll take the Boilermakers close, 72-69.
DJ.
I think Michigan seizes the opportunity. They win by one. Michigan 80, Purdue 79.
Okay. Clausburn, Purdue, or Michigan?
Well, I'm just surprised that this isn't a bigger rivalry than it is. I mean, you've got a bunch of auto workers going up against the people who are engineering the machines that will eventually replace them. So, I think Michigan has a little bit of motivation, and I'll actually agree with TJ for once. I think the Wolverines walk away with this one, 82-75.
I got to like the rivalry. Okay, UCLA, Arizona. Arizona is talented. They're at home. That used to be kind of a death sentence. You don't win in the desert. UCLA, though, has all the talent. I'm going to go against the grain. The world says, give me Arizona. I'm going to go with UCLA. I'm going to go with UCLA on the road. It's about time they get one of these. Seems like every opportunity they've had away from home, they haven't delivered. I think they pull it out. I think their talent outlasts Arizona. Give me UCLA 85-83, UCLA over Arizona. Vokes.
Yeah, I'll play it a little safe and go with the home team here. It should be a pretty good game. I'll take Arizona 83-80.
Okay, so you're going with Zona. TJ?
Yeah, both these teams can score. Arizona's just a little bit better at defense. Arizona 96, UCLA 90.
Okay. Clausburn, do you like the Bruins or the Wildcats?
Well, I will say that even though we might not all agree on our picks, I hope we can all agree we'd love for Lonzo Ball's dad to get bronchitis or pharyngitis or something in that vein. He says his kids are going to be better than Michael Jordan, which I find patently ridiculous. But then again, according to the Twitter sphere, there is a boy with half of Schmitty's genetic material that's shaping up to be a pretty good athlete, so anything is possible. But I think in this one, UCLA ends up running away somewhere in the neighborhood of 95 to 82.
We are going to skip Sparty and Wisconsin. We've got about 90 seconds left. Illinois, Nebraska. Not a good one for Nebraska last night. Illinois is playing better, but I think Nebraska gets right at home. A 6:30 tip-off Sunday night at PBA. Give me the Huskers by about 8. Close ball game, 78-70 over the Illini Vokes.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a tough spot for Nebraska, given how Illinois played of late. But I think that PBA crowd, as you mentioned, can be just enough to get them over the hump. I'll take the Huskers 68-66.
DJ.
Yeah, I like Nebraska in this one. Maybe not as big as they did at Penn State with 16 points, but I'm going to go Nebraska 70, Illinois 61.
Okay, so you like Nebraska. Clausburn, Nebraska, Illinois. How are you feeling about Sunday?
Well, this is the coach we got against the coach everyone wanted. Or, as I like to call it, see, I could have done worse. Well, I think Jim will get him going so long as the PBA lights don't reflect too brightly off of John Gross's dome. I think the Huskers have this one. 75-65.
Okay, 10-point win, says Clausburn. We'll get geared up next week as we get closer to conference tournament time. Clausburn, thanks again, partner.
Okay.
Vogue, you be good. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, there it is, the Friday forecast on Hail Varsity, presented to you by the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a problem with gambling, call the statewide helpline, 1-800-522-4700. We'll wrap up a Friday. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
One final time for the weekly edition of Hail Varsity Radio, weekend edition tomorrow, 7 a.m., 7 to 9. Hope you enjoy your weekend. Busy weekend of basketball. Did you see this about Rob Gronkowski? Well, Gronk had some advice for the commissioner. Don't come to New England. Gronk told ESPN that Pats fans are angry about Goodell suspending Brady. And Gronk believes it would be physically impossible for Goodell to get inside Gillette Stadium. Gronk was asked directly if Goodell can go to Foxborough, and Gronk said, to tell you the truth, I really don't think so. Pats fans are nuts. They're wild. And they have the Patriots back no matter what. They have Tom's back. I'm telling you. He won't even get through the highway. The fans saw him. I don't even think he can land at the airport in Boston because Pats fans are the best fans. They're the most loyal fans. And I'm telling you, they might just carry out Roger themselves. They couldn't even get into the stadium at Foxborough if he landed in Boston. Now, there you go.
You know, I think Roger's got enough money that he probably doesn't need to go there anyways.
No. I just... Gronk is a odd choice. I mean, he can do... If E still did spring break specials, he'd be the great host.
Oh, yeah, okay? For sure.
If they wanted a tour guide for Lake Havasaw in Arizona, which is what I'm sure sold him on going to the University of Arizona, being from upstate New York, from Buffalo. Or if you know, Gronk goes wild on a cruise again. There's certain things he's an awesome spokesperson at. And he might be 80% right with Pats fans.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the type of attention that usually gets you barred from New England.
Yeah. Isn't he like the most unlikely Patriot?
He's
just with the way they run things?
Well, him and Aaron Hernandez.
True.
Well, I mean...
Oh, for sure.
That double...
But I mean, Aaron Hernandez probably wouldn't want to be wanted anywhere, you know?
Not now, but... No, I mean, I think Gronk is... And you obviously see what the matchup hell he causes people.
Oh, yeah.
And I think when it comes to Monday through Saturday meetings and being on time and yes sir, no sir, and shutting his mouth, I think he's earned enough trust to get a little rope with his off the field extravaganza. But this is something that, you know, I just don't poke the league if I'm Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it gets attention on you and it gets attention on New England, and they answered their critics. But it's stuff that Belichick just doesn't like.
Yeah. Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
No, just stay away. Just go do your Gronk thing.
Go do your Gronk annual cruise trip.
It's kind of lovable and cute when, you know, all three food groups, Coors, Budweiser, and Natty Light, are all over your shirtless body with the victory parade. And that's about the extent of pushing the envelope he goes. Where it's just Gronk. Even Belichick's probably, oh, it's just Gronk.
Yeah.
He's a crazy animal. But when it comes to smacking the commissioner, while probably accurate, I don't know. Just find it odd. Well, enjoy your weekend. Hope you're doing okay with travel and family and weather this weekend. Take care. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the Weekend Edition.